You are listening to TCM Talkback.
Tracy, how are you doing this morning?
I am doing great. How about you?
Great. Well, it's always wonderful to catch up with you. We got to talk to you on your last two books, Thirsty and Tandem, and now we are going to talk about your newest book, The Widow of Saunders Creek. And tell us a little bit about this book.
It's about a woman whose husband has died in Iraq. He's a soldier, of course. And she, after about 6 months of living with her mom, she decides to go back to Saunders Creek, which was his home, you know, where he grew up. And he had inherited a home from his grandparents. And she decided to move back and move into that home and renovate. And she's still grieving the loss of her husband. And she's kind of gone back to Saunders Creek just to kind of find him. And when she gets there, just some odd things begin to happen in her home. And she's a little spiritually uneducated, and she doesn't know what's going on. She thinks it's her husband. And just a lot of stuff happens in the course of that to sort of, you know, bring her around to the love of Jesus. And she begins to understand that it's, you know, it's something a little more malevolent than, you know, her husband trying to contact her, so.
Okay. Now, throughout this book, there is a storyline that deals with, like, witchcraft and mediums. And talk a little bit about the origins of witchcraft in the Ozarks and how it's prevalent today. And then also let's talk a little bit about Aunt Trudy and her real powers versus the show type of powers you see from, like, the palm readers and the, you know, the little carnival type of aspect that people think of.
Well, you know, a lot of the mountain people, a lot of the Ozark people came from, like, the Appalachian Mountains and everything, where a lot of that witchcraft and, you know, like, the Widder women, they call them Widder, W-I-D-D-E-R, Widder women. And a lot of the people came over, and so they brought their traditions and superstitions with them. And, you know, there's a lot that has just kind of come down from generation to generation, and it's still very prevalent here. But the Widder women were women who had these, you know, insights and sort of, you know, feelings and sensations, and they could sort of sense things, and even some of them had actual power. And most of them, it wasn't that they were trying to do anything. And even today, it's not that they're trying to be evil or trying to, you know, curse people and all that. It's, you know, they really think that what they're doing is good. And many of them are very religious, and they still, you know, use these powers that they, you know, that they, some of them have. And so it's just very prevalent, and it's not really seen by them, you know, as something from, you know, anything evil. You know, it's, they think they're doing good. And so that's kind of where the character of Aunt Trudy came in. You know, I know families who in this area, you know, who were, you know, have generations in this area who have people like this in their family. And matter of fact, a friend of mine read the book, and he's like, "Oh my Lord, this is my family." And I, you know, of course I didn't know that. Yeah. And, you know, so it's, you know, it's very prevalent here. And, you know, I just wanted to shine a little light on it. And, you know, I don't think they're evil. I mean, they don't want, you know, they're trying to do something good. And kind of going about it in a way that maybe isn't quite good. So,
well, one of the parts of the book that I found interesting was kind of tying into the witchcraft part was Eli's mom. She runs like a natural home remedy store that sells like herbs and other homeopathic items. But that conflict or kind of tension between her and Eli, because it's also used in the witchcraft,
like the Saint John's Wort and some of
Talk a little bit about that you know, kind of tension and dynamic and kind of their opposing views on that issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Eli's mom in the book is a very strong Christian. She's very much, you know, she's not at all, you know, like one of the widow women.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, her family, you know, several people in her family are. But, yes, she just runs a natural food store, and, you know, it has herbs and it has the things that some of the witches, you know, come in, the Wiccans and stuff, you know, come in and buy the products. You know, I think you almost have to, Eli would have wanted her not to carry any of that stuff. But, you know, I mean, St. John's Wort, you know, some of the herbs are good for a lot of things and not just, you know, to use in spells or whatever. And so I think her sort of take on that was, you know, this is my business, and, you know, if they come in and buy something and then use it for something that I don't, you know, approve of, that's not, you know, sort of my responsibility. And, you know, I'm not sure how I feel about that personally, but, you know, I have a friend who runs a sort of a natural store like that here in my town, and she sells all that stuff. You know, if someone comes in and buys it and uses it for something other than what, you know, like if you buy St. John's Wort and you're not using it just to relax, you know, that's, mm-hmm. I mean, they're still going to sell it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just,
right.
You know,
it's
you know,
hard.
I guess
it's
like
if
you
can't really control it.
You can't really police what someone's going to do with something that you sell. I mean, it's like, you know, Sudafed and all that they use to make meth.
Right.
You know, well, you know, they're not going to quit selling it. I mean, it's good for other things.
Right.
You know, I mean, when people take it properly, it's used for, you know, sinuses and stuff. So, you know. But, yeah, you know.
An interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and, I mean, Eli definitely has a problem with it because he's, you know, he's so concerned about their souls, you know, and he
mm-hmm.
doesn't, you know, he kind of takes a hard line with it, you know, and, you know, a lot of people do. I mean, you know, he sees it a little bit as compromise, I think, you know, so.
Okay.
But I don't know how I feel about that.
And I think that it's a difficult question to answer because I remember years ago I was talking to someone about the idea of developing a program that could be used to track corrosion in warehouses and what happens if it's and one of the interested people was a brewery, you know, which you know,
yeah.
I don't have a problem personally with people drinking.
Right.
I attended a Southern Baptist church.
Yeah,
Southern Baptists do have a problem with alcohol.
Yeah.
And so and really it but you can't control that. And the person that I was talking to, the counsel that they gave was like, well, it's not any different than being a sales manager and you sell computers. Well, can you really help it if another salesperson in your company buys those computers for,
mm-hmm.
you know, a less than noble purpose? And so it's hard. You can't really police where things go, but I like the fact that it was brought up because I thought it gave it a good food for thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think as writers, we don't always have to answer the question, you know. I mean, you know, you just want to make people think. And, you know, I think raising a question and showing both sides of an issue is just really a powerful tool to get people to open up a dialogue, to get conversation going, to get people to really think about, you know, what is the right thing to do here? What is the right thing? Well, you know, it's not really a... it's more of an open-ended question, you know, there's not
right.
really an answer, you know, it's kind of based on, well, what do you think? Well, this is what I think, okay, well, that's your opinion, you know, I mean, there are no hard and fast rules when it comes to, you know, buying and selling and, you know, trying to, I mean, it's like, you know, like you said, a computer salesman, you know, if a computer salesman sells a computer to a porn addict, you know, well, how do they know what they're going to use that computer
exactly.
for?
So,
exactly. you know, it's sort of is what it is.
Well, let's talk about Jared a little bit because even though he is not alive through this book,
uh-huh.
he still plays a very pivotal, you know, he's a central figure in it.
Right.
And Eli and Corey have some similar but different views of Jared. Talk about how they view him differently.
Well, I mean, Eli grew up with him, and he was always sort of in Jared's shadow because Jared was the more charismatic of the two of them. He sort of had his grandmother's favor, you know, more than Eli did. Jared was sort of, you know, the all-American superboy of the town, a very small town. And Eli was just always sort of in his shadow. But the truth of the matter was that Jared wasn't, you know, he wasn't all that he portrayed. It's like the difference between persona and reality. And Eli knew that. Eli knew because of some things that happened. I don't want to give away the story, but, you know, some things that happened in their past. Where Eli, you know, he's the understated real hero of that relationship and of the town and in that story. And, you know, a lot of times we draw on the person who is the most charismatic and the one that's the most sort of out there. And that's the one we look at when really, you know, it's the widow's mite, it's the Mother Teresa, it's the, you know, the people who are understated and just going about their lives and doing the right thing, who are the real heroes. You know, of our lives, and you know, we like to put people on pedestals because they look good, you know, and that's sort of what the town does to Jared and Corey, you know, as his wife, she was madly in love with him, and you know, they had this, you know, together they had this wonderful life for many years, and you know, she just you know, she doesn't really see the part of Jared that Eli sees, and Eli's too much of a hero to tell her. And so she has to sort of come to her own, you know, and get over the grief. And, you know, when we first started writing the book, there was some stuff we edited out because it sort of made Jared look bad, you know, but I mean, he was a hero. He was a hero in his own right, and I think in the end he became the man that Corey sees him to be. But you know, from Eli's perspective, you know, he wasn't what he knew better. But he still protected him because he loved him, you know. So that was sort of the difference in the way they viewed him.
Do you think that by painting Jared just a little bit, and granted, it isn't just a terrible. You know, he's not just a terrible, unheroic person, but he is tainted just a little bit. But he's also, that you know, he died as a hero. He died very much being heroic. Do you think that you run the risk at all of kind of isolating some readers or irritating them because they want this strong military person to be that hero through and through?
Well, you know, I hope not. I mean, He, because in the end, like you said, you know, he was a hero, you know, he became the hero that he wanted to be. And, you know, I think, you know, as when people read the book, they'll see that. But he's still a person. You know, my husband has had two deployments and in this war, and he's a hero in my life. He's a hero, but he's also very human and he has his weaknesses just like we all do. And, you know, I think I just wanted to show that Jared, you know, while he was a hero in the end and he did the right thing, you know, he had some growing to do. And he wasn't always a hero. And, you know, and I think part of my characterization of Jared was just to show, you know, we, as people, we can change and we can grow and we can come into that place that when push comes to shove, you know, we're willing to lay down our lives for what's important. And that's what he did. And I really saw him as a hero. I mean, I didn't see him, you know, as a tainted character. And, you know, so at first, you know, when I was writing the book, it, you know, I showed a little, because he was dead, you have to be careful not to show too much of the bad stuff, you know, and I showed too much, I tainted him too much, and I didn't want people to not like him, because he did die a hero, he was a hero, you know, for the country, and fought for this country, and, you know, and he was Corey's hero, and, you know, so, yeah, so we took a lot of that out, you know, just because I didn't want people to have a misconception of him.
Okay. Now, I thought you just did a fantastic job of developing the relationship between Corey and Eli while navigating the issue that Jared, you know, has recently died. Talk about this part of the book, and what was the most challenging part of it for you to write in writing this evolving relationship?
Well, I mean, you don't want, you know, I mean, I heard someone say one time, I hate it when, you know, the story starts and the hero's dead just so that, you know, or the spouse is dead just so you can have a romance between the hero and the heroine. And so a lot of times in my books, I won't do that. You know, I don't like have a death of a loved one like that, you know, so that we can open the door for a romance. But this one was so important to do that, and because she had to get through the grieving process. And with Eli, the challenge was, because it had been so recent, I mean, it had been 6 months, you know, is at the beginning of the book, her husband has been dead for 6 months. And so obviously the romance couldn't start right away. There couldn't be a lot of, you know, romantic tension or attraction or whatever, so they had to start off as friends. And that's, you know, I'm an impatient kind of person, so that's a real challenge for me, because I want them to be like sparks, you know, from the very beginning, because I love romance. So that was a real challenge, and my editor actually helped me dial that back a little bit too. It was a real challenge, you know, because not only is Eli the hero in a romantic sense, but he's also kind of the pastor in the story. You know, he doesn't want to hurt Corey in any way, but yet he wants to speak truth into her life, that what she's sensing in her home and what she's experiencing in her home isn't Jared, you know. But by the same token, I didn't want him to be a preachy character, you know, because nobody likes a preachy character. And so it was a real challenge. His character was probably the most challenging of the book, because I wanted my readers to love him and root for him, but I still wanted him to speak truth into her life. And so that was a real challenge, and I hope I pulled it off. I tried to pull it off. I worked hard to pull it off. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I thought the balance was great between them. I loved, and I'm not a romance reader. That's not my genre at all. But I loved watching their relationship develop, because there was caution in it. It wasn't, let's just throw it all to the wind and let's just dive in head first and fall madly in love with each other. It was a very cautious, let's take time to make sure we're looking out for the needs of the other person that for them.
And I think because I didn't want I wanted it to have a romance, because I, you know, like I said, I do love romance, but I didn't want the book to be a romance, because that's not what the book was about. You know, that wasn't where my heart was. I wanted her to heal, and I wanted her to find that perfect soulmate, you know, that person that, you know, that really gets her, that's for her, that's on her side, that supports her and everything. And really, Jared didn't do that a lot. I mean, it wasn't his fault. You know, she was willing to sort of, you know, set everything aside and, you know, and devote her life to him because she loved him. And there's a place for that too, but her relationship with Eli is different. You know, he knows that, you know, unless she's open to that part of her that's creative, you know, that part that God created for her to, you know, to express herself, you know, for herself, then, you know, she's not a whole person. And she's not a whole person, you know, when the book begins. And she begins to heal from a lot of, you know, a lot of wounds, you know, I think throughout the book. And, you know, you have to keep it a little bit subtle, you know, you can't just throw it all out there, but I hope that came through. I really hope that came through with the readers.
You know, one of the things on this particular book, the cover art, I think it's beautiful. I mean, it just so captures her
goodness.
Essence at the beginning, the you know, obviously grieving and hurting. It just, I looked at that cover and thought, that's just fantastic.
It was perfect. It was perfect, perfect. The, you know, the whole team at this publishing house is just amazing. I mean, every single one of them, from the editors to the cover design team to the marketing and sales folks. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better partnership for an author, you know, for their books. And I was blown away by that cover. I was just, I mean, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, my goodness, that's Corey. And, it was magnificent.
Yeah, I have to say, I looked at that and thought, that's going to be a hard book not to read just because of the cover on that. But we'll give a little promos real quick to Waterbrook, because Waterbrook is a publisher on this one. And the cover art people deserve some credit there.
Multitudes of praise. Absolutely multitudes of praise. And, you know, they've really come through with, you know, the other two books I've written for Waterbrook also. But this one, there's just something just almost surreal about it that I agree with you. I mean, it's just, I couldn't have asked for a more perfect cover.
It was beautiful. And let's talk a little bit about the two previous books that you wrote within Thirsty and Tandem, because I thought it was kind of interesting. They both contained a vampire element. And in some cases, those vampires they're given a little bit of grace. They're not, you know, totally evil. And this book deals with witchcraft, but you take a very firm stance against the witchcraft, side of it. Talk a little bit about your approach to these two subjects and why you chose to give a little bit of grace to the vampires and not so much grace to the witchcraft.
Boy, that is a great question. That's like one of the best questions I've ever had. And I appreciate it. Here's the thing. The vampire books were metaphoric. You know, they were, I mean, obviously vampires are not real. You know, they're a tool. They're a symbol. And so when I was writing them, you know, it was symbolic of sort of generational curses that, you know, are passed down, you know, through family lines. You know, with the first one, it was alcoholism, you know, and, you know, the second one I don't even remember, and then horrible. But it was symbolism. It's fantasy. Vampires, you know, they're not real. Witchcraft, you know, I know a lot of people don't believe that witchcraft is real, and I don't have a problem with, like, shows like Bewitched or, say, the Harry Potter. You know, that's fantasy to me. But when you're talking about magic that happens when witches get together and they cast spells and they, you know, they get together and they conjure up, you know, they try to conjure up the dead or whatever. That's, of course, that's more mediums. But, you know, that's very real. I mean, it's very real. The Bible speaks about it. And it's something that, you know, Christians have no business taking part of. And, you know, I have a friend who is a former witch and medium and ghost hunter. And she thought she was, I mean, she was, you know, she considered herself a Christian witch. And she really thought she was doing something good. And so, you know, while I have compassion and love for people who consider themselves witches, people who think they have a gift from God to use for good, but, you know, Satan has taken these gifts or whatever they are and has really twisted them and deceived people. I have no patience with that. And it's not about the person doing it. It's about the lie of the devil. And I have no patience with that. None whatsoever. You know, I mean, I'm not religious when it comes to, you know, Harry Potter or, you know, vampire shows or whatever. You know, I think those are fantasy. I think, you know, people should, you know, they have the choice whether to watch them or not. I don't think God really cares. But I think when we're talking about, you know, people who are actually in covens, people who are actually casting spells, who are actually conjuring up, you know, people they think are the dearly departed, to lie. You know, all the devil does is lie. I mean, that's what the word said. He's the father of lies. He's a liar. And he's deceived a generation of people, because his main purpose is to steal, kill, and destroy, and to, you know, sort of yank people away from, you know, the love of God. And, you know, of course you can't do that, but people, you know, I mean, because his love is forever, but, you know, but there's such deceit in the world right now. I have no patience with that because it's real. And vampires, you know, Harry Potter kind of witch, all that's fantasy. It's, you know, I don't see that as harmful. I do see this as harmful. And, you know, it's just a purpose that I felt like I never wanted to write this kind of book. Never. Mm-hmm. I've always been a big chicken. Yeah, always been a big chicken. And like two or three years ago, I just, you know, the storyline just started coming to me, and it just wouldn't let me go. And, you know, so I started doing a little research, and I had a little bit of, you know, my own sort of, you know, issues while I was writing it. You know, there were some flickering lights and craziness, you know. But I'll tell you what, it's worth it. You know, it's worth it to get to do. But it, to me, that was just a, you know, I that probably sounds crazy, but to me, you know, that was just a, sort of a sign that I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. And I probably never felt with, you know, I've written 40 books, and this book is probably the first book that I've ever written that I felt that I felt purpose, you know, in writing the book, that I felt real purpose, like, okay, you know, I'm definitely doing what I'm supposed to be doing here. I'm writing what I'm supposed to be writing here. And, you know, I really had to lean on God the whole time I was writing it. And, you know, I didn't really resist it. You know, it was just, it took a while for it to all form in my head because I wanted to do it right. I wanted to do it in a way that was authentic and my truth, what I believe to be true. And, you know, I just, you know, you watch shows like Ghost Hunter and, you know, it's just, to me, it's just such a trap from the devil. And, you know, I read a book. Actually, we talked about it in the last interview. And I loved the book, but I fundamentally disagreed with some of the issues. Well, I'll just say it. You can edit it out. In Nightmare, Robin, is it Robin Parrish?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I loved the book. And look, I did. I loved it, you know. But, you know, his contention is, well, maybe these are ghosts. You know, maybe they are, you know, I just don't know. And, you know, the word isn't real specific, but I believe the word is specific. And, you know, I don't think that it's really open to interpretation. You know, we're not supposed to conjure up the dead, period. And,
well,
you know,
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree with you. The word is very clear. I mean, there's very strong discussion in the Bible against conjuring the dead. I totally agree with you on that one. That would be pretty black and white issue.
And I think, you know, sort of reading that book, you know, kind of bolstered, and I had already, you know, like I said, I had already been sort of developing this book in my head, and, you know, I'd written a few notes that I'd never, you know, I hadn't proposed it or anything. But once I read that book, something welled up in me, and I'm never an activist, you know. I'm just kind of like, yeah, whatever, you know, people can do whatever they want. I don't really care. But this just, it really just, you know, it lit a fire in me, I think. And like I said, I loved that book, Nightmare. You know, I love his writing, and I loved the book, and, you know, and the other books that, you know, that he's written. And, you know, but there was something to me that was just fundamentally wrong. And so it kind of lit a fuse for me to go ahead and, you know, get this one going. And, you know, it's, I mean, it's certainly not a counter book, you know, to that it, by any means, you know, with my own, it was just,
they're very different books, and they have different focuses and different themes. And
I'll admit it's
been a couple of years since I read Nightmare, and so I think probably over 100 books between the time I read that one and this one. So
yeah.
They kind of all get fuzzy in there. But I do remember the ending of that one being left open as to whether or not, you know, ghosts were real and what they had experienced, whether or not that was real. but I
it used like technology and stuff to, you know, and so I mean it kind of was more scientific in the way and less supernatural sort of in the end, you know, and it was interesting. It was a cool approach and I loved it, you know. But, you know.
Yeah.
So my book
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I was just saying, yeah, I'm just kind of reiterating that my book is completely different. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just a totally different book, you know, so.
Yeah. But Nightmare's a good one. That's a good one for people to
mm-hmm.
find. So,
totally good.
But, okay, well, what is next for you?
You know, right now I'm just kind of taking a break. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do next. I'm kind of kicking around some nonfiction stuff right now. I've got I'd really like to stay with, if going back to fiction or, you know, continuing with fiction, I would really like to stay with this topic in a way, you know, and maybe I have an angel series that I'm sort of developing right now. I like the whole supernatural genre. I know it's a hard sell, but I just really like it, and I think it's a, you know, it's kind of a topic right now that the world's interested in, you know, and I think that as Christians, we've got to bring an answer, you know, our belief, you know, a true answer to the questions, you know, that are kind of coming up in the world, and, you know, because if we don't give the answer, who's going to, you know?
Well, it's going to be hard for them to get a correct answer or a true answer.
Yeah.
If Christians don't provide that answer for them. And so that's pretty cool. I look forward to hearing more about that as you get further along. Angels are always a fun topic, but I love the supernatural genre. That's always my genre I like things set in the here and now where everything is explainable. I like that, but my beginnings and roots are always in the supernatural. I just love that genre.
Yeah, I do too, and I hope that it will continue. I hope that Widow will do really well so that we can, you know, keep going with it. And I'd almost like to do a sequel with Ava, the ex-girlfriend. Okay. You know, I'd almost like to kind of have an idea about that too, you know, because she's kind of hanging in the balance too, because she's kind of got those same gifts that her mom had, and what's she going
to
do with them? So, you know,
I think so. So where can readers find out more about you and your books?
I have a website, www.tracybateman.com. Also have a Facebook page and Twitter. So that's, you know, the usual.
The usual.
Yeah, I'm not giving them my phone number, but, you know, they're welcome to come to my Facebook page or visit me on my website. You know, I enjoy interaction with my readers. So,
cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I have to say it's been fun talking to you as always. Love the book. The cover is just kind of a warm-up to the material inside, but it's a fantastic book and really enjoyed it. It's different. It's got some good spiritual insight and great characters. So
Thank you so much.
And I guess we will talk to you whenever the next one comes out, hopefully.
All right. Awesome.
See you again.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot. You have a great day.